Hello, welcome to another episode of the Thoughts from Limbo podcast. We're super excited to announce this week's guest. We're joined by Mackenzie Ryan. She was ranked the number one New York City power broker by Forbes, the youngest broker ever to receive this recognition. She is known as the go-to agent for selling properties that others are unable to sell and has recently joined the Douglas Elliman team. As a former Olympic gymnast, her work ethic and positive energy are like nothing I'd ever seen before. We talk about her impressive athletic background, where she gets the confidence to fervently follow her passions, and how she manages the ups and downs of such a turbulent and competitive industry. She also shares some of the habits that help her power through when things get tough and continue to radiate joy and positive energy everywhere she goes. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here is the very impressive and very talented Mackenzie Ryan. Hey, Mackenzie, how are you?
Hello, I'm fantastic. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. I'm so excited for this episode. I cannot tell you. I'm so glad we got it in the diary before the end of the year.
I knew I had a couple of really important podcasts to do, and this was top of list. So I'm excited to chat with you and all of your users and listeners and share everything that I have in my vault.
Okay, amazing. Well, I don't want to, you know, butcher your intro, so I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do. It is the coolest thing.
Okay, well, hopefully this intro lives up to it. Hi, everyone. I am Mackenzie Ryan, born and raised, totally awesome, native New Yorker. I am a fabulous New York City real estate agent with a strong background in history, architecture, and all things New York, and a double back background as a lifelong ballerina and former Olympic trainee as a rhythmic gymnast. I am the mom to a beautiful little doggy named Winter, my Shiba Inu, and I am a person of New York City who loves to share the amazing culture, history, architecture, and real estate with the world.
Oh my God, that was great. And before I start fangirling on Million Dollar Listing New York, which is a show that I really want to talk to you about, let's go back to the beginning. Tell me about the gymnastics that you used to do, because it was like, we're not talking like, you know, after school gymnastics, we're talking like professional gymnastics. Yes.
Well, I am or was a rhythmic gymnast, which involves apparatus like the hoop, ball, clubs, ribbon, rope, and floor routines as well. And rhythmic gymnastics is different in that A, you're using apparatus, but B, it's based on like contortion, strength, rhythm, and then insane tricks with your apparatus. So I started as a gymnast in 1995, and I started, I'll say, really training by 96 when one of New York's top coaches saw me at, you know, just kind of like at that time after school gymnastics, it was like a summer camp at Chelsea Piers, and recommended that I'd be a really great rhythmic gymnast. And from that point, I began competing all around New York, all around the US, getting to travel the world, going to London. And I had this fantastic career. By the time I was 8 years old, I was, signing my first book deals with Random House to publish two books about my life as a gymnast and a child prodigy, which I can sign and send to you if you'd like. And yes. I was going on... Noted. I'll make sure to get your address after this. And I was doing all the morning shows and, you know, getting to, you know, meet all these like famous anchors and famous gymnasts and just exposed to like this incredible world at such a young age, which to me was super special and carries over into my life now. I went to my first Junior Olympics in the year 2000 and won a silver medal. I went to another Junior Olympics in maybe 2003 or 4. And I was a very high level, great gymnast. I started doing ballet while I was also training as a gymnast, which really seems totally crazy now at the time. But I was super determined to make something great of my life. And gymnastics, of course, prepared and trained me to be an amazing real estate agent, because the two have such strong parallels. And, you know, what I learned as a gymnast is what I use now as a real estate agent. And I always say that real estate is my personal Olympics.
Wow. Oh my God. I feel, do you know what cinnamon Grahams are by any chance?
Yeah, like the cereal?
Yeah. I've just had a box full for dinner. This is not the story I needed to hear right now. I should have just had like broccoli and done some stretches or something.
Well, you know what? Last night I had 7 Reese's for dinner. So, you know, broccoli, cinnamon grams, whatever you're doing, it's okay. Just try to find a little bit of balance when you can.
Yeah, I must say it's not like my usual day. As I said, I'm staying in my family home for Christmas, and it's just been like just one of those intense days where everyone was in the kitchen and I was like, I'm not cooking right now. I didn't want to spend over 2 minutes here. Grab a box, grab the milk, grab a bowl, and I just left. You mentioned, did you say that you started in 1994 or 95?
95, yes. I was 3, and it was that gym was called Tumblebugs, maybe. It was when we were living in Connecticut. And I was always like, I'm the youngest of my 3 siblings. I have older brother, older sister, I guess 2 siblings. And I was always like the ragtag, like, you know, just wanting to go do everything that they did. And so there was this gymnastics program close to our house. And yeah, I think it was called Tumblebugs. And so my brother and sister would go, and I always wanted to do everything that they did. And I was like so much smaller, which like really helped me grow, like to be so tough and like so strong. And I just loved it. You know, I was doing things like back dives when I was 3 and probably giving my parents heart attacks. I was like hanging from things, always like upside down. And so I just had this wonderful curiosity of like what it'd be like to experience life in all these different gymnastics positions and aerial and tumbling. And so I'd go to this gym and I would just throw myself like places. And what I learned just like a year later when I started going to Chelsea Pierce Gymnastics is that my strength was actually more in my flexibility versus some gymnasts are, you know, like better at tumbling, you know, better at doing uneven bars. My strength was really at being able to like bend and hold crazy positions for like long periods of time while doing like other tricks. So everyone's body is a little different. But yes, 95 is my official start date.
Oh my God. Like, what was I doing? I don't know, but I was not competing as a gymnast. And I'm curious, were your siblings, were any of them into gymnastics?
No, my siblings were into other sports. And what's so great about my family and about my brother and sister is that we're all about a year and a half apart. But we're all so close and friends. Like there was never that competing edge of like, oh, Kenzie's doing this. And like, she's getting, we all had our own avenues and our own lanes to explore. And it was really wonderful because we're still so close to this day and having their support has always meant so much to me.
And I'm curious, where did the drive to make something of yourself come from? Because I feel like a lot of the time, or at least like it's a frustration that I felt and other people I'm sure have felt, but for me it was more so like once you become an adult and you're like, okay, you know, you've ticked the boxes academically, now you've got to actually do something, like make something out of yourself. That's when the pressure hit. And for you, I guess it was like a natural thing because you were so young, it wasn't even really a pressure, it was more of a ambition, like you ooze positivity. It's like, where does that positivity and that drive come from?
Yeah, it's a question I get asked a lot. And, you know, I still wish I had a better answer for everyone. And maybe I should give it some serious thought next time I like sit down and have free time. But I think it comes from the idea that like, we only really have this one life, you know, there isn't, and maybe there is a second go at it. But in my mind, in this body, in this world, like this is my one chance to really, you know, leave it all out on the floor. And I think that mentality must come from just the way I saw the world growing up. because I had so much exposure to so many different people, so many different places, realizing how expansive the world is and how much you really, you know, need to do in order to see or conquer it or experience it all, just gave me this sense of urgency to start at a young age and to not stop. And that, you know, that ambition is definitely a rarity, I think. And especially to go from gymnastics to another high level, high performing career, I think you have to be positive. You have to be optimistic. And I promise you there are days like today where I was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm like, everyone's going to find out that like I suck and I'm a failure. and then I'm walking across the street and I'm like, wait. I'm like, you've already done this. why are you having this like moment? But it's okay to have those moments. And I think just going through them and saying to yourself, you've already gotten this far. When those little like fear tidbits start to creep in and you're starting to wonder like, how am I gonna get back up and, you know, be my very best? I think it's okay to just let it, it is okay to just let it happen and know that your baseline is positivity, know that your baseline is like happiness, and know that all the pressure you're feeling is something that you've created inside. Mm-hmm. Like, there's zero people emailing me saying like, you need to do better. Like, that doesn't happen. That's just me inside being like, no, you can do this. And it's knowing your full potential that actually builds the pressure. But if you take daily moments, exercises, activities to continue building your own happiness, your professional career, your personal relationships, I think that's what helps keep some of that like pressure, you know, at bay, or at least being able to manage it in a more like normal and healthy way.
Yeah. And I think balance is so important. Like, I feel a lot of people compartmentalize, and I've been guilty of this too at times, where I feel like you've got your like people, let's say for example, you have like, let's put career in one box, socializing in another box, and then anything like fitness wise in another box. They tend to be like how like my priorities tend to like what they, the categories that they kind of fall between. And there are times where like I'll be really frustrated that I'm not doing very well in one. Yeah. And I let others, I'll be like, okay, I'm not going to exercise because I'm going to spend the hour and a half that I'd exercise into researching this thing or taking this course or whatever. And it's at the time, I feel like I'm being more productive, but it's a very short term. Like, it's not a sustainable way to go. I think you need that balance in all three areas.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a lifelong practice. Like, truly, I think a lot of times we'll overcompensate in one area because we maybe don't want to actually do the other. And so we'll feel more productive in one. And I do it too. I mean, this week I've gone to my office every day and I've gone to the gym zero times. And it's because I've felt like I've been lacking, you know, on like the professional side, which also isn't true, but you know, the new year is coming and I'm thinking, you know, I want to sell a lot of real estate and I want to do the best for my clients and I have so much work to get done. So let me just focus at the office. And then on the other hand, it's like, I haven't been very like physical. And so balance is a practice, life is a practice, everything that we do should be like, we shouldn't put so much pressure on ourselves to feel like we have to do all of them. I think at the end of the day, if you feel, you know, at the end of my day today, if I, you know, do some push-ups and, you know, raise my legs a couple times, like I'll feel better about at least getting a little bit about more balance into my day than not.
And you mentioned your office. You've just moved, right? You used to be at one real estate firm and now you're in another one. Is that right?
That is correct. So breaking news for everyone. I am with Douglas Elliman after a really incredible and wonderful number of years at Compass. And I'm really excited for this next chapter of my career and elevating everything that I do and, you know, seeing where this next road leads me. It's very exciting and nerve-wracking and exciting.
Well, like, I'm sure you'll do amazing there too. I think I recognize the name. To be completely candid, I have no idea about real estate other than from Million Dollar Listing New York. Yes. Is that the firm that Frederick Eklund was in?
That is, yes.
Oh my God.
Frederick Eklund is a fantastic, now globally known real estate agent here in New York, also in California, as well as I think he just expanded into Texas. And wow. In addition, in our California office, we have a couple of realtors on Million Dollar Listing, I guess Beverly Hills, LA. This wow. is so bad. I don't watch, I actually like so rarely watch TV. So I'm like not madly like hooked on reality TV uh-huh. or any real estate shows because I spend all of my day in reality real estate. So. But yeah, that is Douglas Elliman. We have some really incredible agents. It's a globally known brand. We do a lot of amazing projects here in New York, a lot of beautiful new developments that if you look at the skyline today and you see a lot of the tall towers, like our company are the exclusive agents for selling all that real estate. So it's just been a really fantastic and exciting time for me. And you know, like those little jitters, just like ready to get going and, you know, kick it off with a blast. So I'm excited.
Wow. Yeah. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with the show or with, you know, the kind of like, we're not talking about like average real estate agents that you'd go rent a shared room for an apartment in. We're talking like listings worth millions of dollars. What's your, if you don't mind me asking, I don't know if this is like a taboo question, we can cut this sure. out, but what's the highest deal that like the highest apartment, the most expensive apartment you've sold?
Yeah, right now it's at 8 million. And this year I'll look to increase, you know, every year everyone kind of like sets their goals and a lot of people set like a sales goal, like how much real estate they want to sell. I have no idea how much real estate I'll sell this year. Like that number to me, I feel is either limiting. Actually, I feel like a sales goal is limiting because you're either trying to get to a place and you're putting too much pressure on yourself to get there, or you may be setting the bar too low and, you know, then kind of not doing as much. So I try to focus on a goal instead about like, I call it, well, last year I was focusing on like three, I called it three at a time. So I wanted to focus on selling real estate that was about roughly $3 million at a time and focus on that level of property and keep building from there. This year I'm calling it five at a time. I want to focus on just, you know, on working on more $5 million properties and up. I of course work across so many different price points, under a million, you know, 3 million, 10 million, well, 8 million for now. But I think that for me is more attainable because you can really focus on daily activities to get to that five at a time and really focus your energy on that versus like, how do I sell $100 million this year? Because that is a very large and obtuse number. And for me, I've never found like a sales goal to be very beneficial.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely right. I would completely agree. I think it makes a lot of sense. And also, I wasn't actually going to talk about this because I feel like it's a bit of a sensitive subject, but purely because I hesitated when I asked the question, I feel like it's something I should address because it's actually an argument that I had with my mom the other day.
Sure. Okay. Yeah,
it's fresh in mind. So I was talking about money and I don't even remember what context, but it was something, I don't know, it was related to how much money someone made, maybe like an actor or, oh, something about, so I read that the shares in Peloton had fallen because, yeah. Spoiler, but it's all over the newspaper anyway, Mr. Big in the new Sex and the City release thing, which I also don't watch, by the way. But yeah. So Sex and the City has released a new series, and episode one, Mr. Big dies after working out on a Peloton bike, and that made Peloton shares drop by something like 11% or something. They lost millions, if not billions. And then I was talking about it, and my mum was like, God, it's so distasteful to talk about money. And then a friend of hers was there, and she joined in, and then a friend of my brother's was there, and it turned into this huge conversation. And I was like, why is it that it's so, like, it just some people are so adverse to talking about money? I don't really like get it. And you're someone who comes from a world where it's very normal to talk about money and high quantities of money, and people know how much people are making, or like, not necessarily salary wise, but you can tell roughly how much someone's commission is going to be if you know how much they've sold an apartment for. Mm-hmm. Do you think it is so sensitive, or does it just depend on the industry?
That's a great question. I think that money in general is sensitive because sometimes you may not have a lot and that may not feel good. And sometimes you have a lot of money and you may feel badly because, you know, you're considerate of what someone else's situation may be. I think when it comes to, I'll just say, like, real estate money and like commission, I think really the important thing to remember is how difficult of an industry this is to actually make it in. You know, there's no one that comes around and hands out property for you to sell. Like, you have to build a business from the ground up. You know, we're not assigned anything, like, we're not given anything. Like, so every house that we sell, that came from a relationship. And where do you find people? Where do you talk to people? Like, having to educate yourself professionally so that you can be the best advisor to them. You know, that takes, and it's not like one person is just selling an apartment every year. Like, we're talking about a lifespan of maybe like 3 to 5 years before another transaction happens. And mm-hmm. So, you know, when it comes to real estate commissions, I feel like there's a very big misconception out there that A, real estate agents have an easy job. It's so hard. It's actually like, I'm not kidding. Being a real estate agent is a really hard job. Because there is no money unless you sell something, there is no commission to talk mm-hmm. about.
Yeah.
So that's already like, that's an insane thought. Like, that's already fear invoking. And then secondhandedly, like, people think that, you know, the kind of like base commission we'll say is like 6%. That's usually split between two people. So it's 3%, 3%. And then whatever agreement you have with your real estate firm, that's another big, you know, that's another big chunk as well. And then there's taxes. So by the time, and then there's, of course, money that you spend to market listings. There's your own sweat equity as well. So by the time, you know, everything is all said and done, and the number of years it actually took for you to get to selling an apartment, I would say, you know, you're just really focused on doing the best you can for your clients and not on the commission.
Mm-hmm. And during this argument, I basically made the mistake potentially of saying, like, I want to, I'm like even afraid to say it, but I do want to make money. Like, I don't understand why that's like a bad thing to say sometimes. Like, I appreciate there's a lot of people who don't have a lot. And I obviously, like, I'm not saying I want to take from anyone, but what I'm saying is, like, I'm prepared to work hard. And one of my ambitions, obviously I have many, but one of them is to have a good quality of life. And so for that, unless I move to a communist country, which I don't plan on doing, I'm going to have to make money because we live in a capitalist society. Right. And I just don't understand why there's so much stigma sometimes. And I do think, actually, do you think there's like double standards for men and women? Have you ever felt this in your industry? Because again, also your industry is particularly competitive. Yes. Do you see a difference between how men approach that industry and how women approach it?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, interestingly enough, residential real estate was really founded by women. What sort of developed commercial real estate was all men. And so more or less, like, at dinner parties, at, gatherings, at events, you know, the women would be there with their husbands and they would talk about like real estate, but they were talking about their home, they were talking about vacation homes, secondary homes, whatnot. And so the residential real estate brokerage actually grew out of women's ambition to start transacting and have their own place at the table and be a part of this real estate society. Yet, you know, if I just kind of circle back to the million-dollar listing shows and you think about what the cast balance is, like, it's almost all men.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fine. Like, TV is TV. You know, obviously, drama is drama. That's what things go for. But I think overall, you know, a lot of it just comes down to your own professionalism, what you bring to the table, your own track record. You know, I never try to make excuses for why I gotten something or why I haven't. I don't look at boundaries. Like, obviously I know I'm a woman, but I don't look at it as like a plus or minus. I just focus on like Mackenzie. Like, that's all I want to be at the end of the day to anyone, is just myself. And so, you know, there probably are, you know, scenarios in which, you know, being one or the other helps you get further. But I think to even focus on that is to distract from you getting to where you want to go. So I would say just focus on yourself, just focus on you and what you want, and versus like on you and what you are or aren't.
Yeah, that's good advice. And actually, I hadn't noticed that. I mean, subconsciously, I'm sure I noticed it, but you're right. The cast of Million Dollar Listing was like, for a very long time, it was predominantly three guys. And then one guy dropped out and he was replaced by another guy. Yeah. And it's only like, I don't know if they're on season 10 or something, because I don't follow it religiously, but like whatever season they're on now, I don't know if it's like 8 or 9 or 10. And now there's a woman. And even the woman, it's like, I mean, she's incredible. She's like a power woman. Yeah. But she's unfortunately married to a developer. And so she sometimes sells some of his stuff, and it still comes across sometimes as though he's the boss. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you've finally put a woman on the show and she's still kind of, you know, working for her husband sometimes, which is annoying.
I've never seen it. I have no concept. But but yeah, I think overall, I think the best takeaway really is to like never put too much focus on boxes. Man, woman, race, religion, class. Because if you're starting to look at your boxes, then like that's where you're going to stay. I just always try to focus on like, Mackenzie, what are my dreams, and communicate those as flexibly as I can, so that no one can ever say like, you didn't get this because of this. And if that's the case, I always feel badly for people like that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's really good advice. And also, I was wondering, most brokers, I assume, work for an agency or a firm. But you said they don't actually help you get the listing. It's not like they give you a listing to sell for them. You have to find it yourself. So then what stops brokers from branching out on their own and just doing their own thing? Because what does the firm actually do for them?
Yeah, so real estate firms are very effective in like a handful of ways. Of course, having a strong brand, a strong platform to work from is super important. Having like the database of like properties, having like the legal support, all the documents that you have to use. I mean, it's basically the inner workings of like any business, whether it's a brokerage or like a law firm. Like, having a company that is well established and that's like a well-oiled machine, all of that back-end stuff that like I would never have any idea how to do and would also like cost a lot. You know, brokerages are really great places also to like network with other agents in different markets. So there's so much value in having a great real estate brokerage behind you. You know, the relationships that they can help you win because of, you know, their historic, because of like their brand history or like, you know, their track record, that stuff is so important for me and definitely for thousands of other real estate agents as well.
Okay. See, I honestly, like, It's because I too don't watch that much TV, but my dad is an architect. And so he loved that show. Yeah. And it was years ago, literally, honestly, when the show probably just started. Like, I think it was like maybe 10 years ago we started watching it. And then I took a break for a few years because I like lived abroad and didn't live at home and just didn't watch it. And now that I've recently come back, we watched a couple episodes and I'm so into it. And that's what actually takes me on to my next question, which is about how you got into it, because you're so young and you started in this. So are you 28, by the way?
29.
Oh, 29. Okay. Yeah. Damn it. I thought you were going to be like me. And I was like, oh, 20. Like, I've never met anyone else who's 28.
Yeah, I know. Well, I got into real estate right after I retired as a gymnast. And I had this like budding ambition to still, of course, pursue my dream of being the best. And I was in love with New York City history and architecture. And so I go to open houses on the weekends because it was the best way, aside from going to museum, to be that close to like incredible, I'll just call them like mini museums in New York City. And from there, you know, I would walk around with my resume and go to every single real estate shop in town. I would apply for internships anywhere that I could. And I basically designed what I call like a real estate MBA program for myself. So every summer I'd work in a different field of real estate, whether it was commercial, development, marketing, retail, industrial, residential. Knowing that by the time I was 18, when you can actually get licensed, I would, you know, become a residential real estate broker. But I wanted to have that great wealth of knowledge so that I could always advise my clients across any transaction. So officially licensed when I was 18, and I've been selling real estate now for 11 years.
Oh my God. So you were, when you started getting into, because I heard you as well in another interview and you were mentioning you loved like the history and the architecture behind all these buildings. Like when did, that's a really admirable, but also unique, let's say, ambition to have as a very young teenager. Why did that spark your interest?
Well, my New York City, my seventh grade history class was the history of New York City. And I was just fascinated with how New York had grown from a small Dutch trading post into a thriving metropolis. And that type of, you know, that type of incredible growth from downtown Manhattan, from, you know, New York used to just basically be one big forest into now this like concrete jungle, as they call it. And, you know, how real estate developed and drove Manhattan's actual development into metropolis along the way. That to me was so fascinating that I just wanted to dive in head first and understand like who the major real estate developers were in the 17 and 1800s. Why development happened in certain neighborhoods versus others. And, you know, a lot of it you can, I have like a massive collection of history books. A lot of it you can, of course, you know, read about, you know, watch documentaries, but so much of it is just walking around New York City, going into, you know, different buildings. I love walking into, I mean, my favorite thing on the weekend is, I just call it meandering, just going to look at as many buildings as possible. And then, of course, anywhere that you can actually walk into is like the best way to experience New York itself. But then, of course, having this amazing benefit of my career, which is actually working inside of these masterpieces and getting to share them and share their value and share their amazingness with the world. That's actually, if you can't tell, what really excites me. And, you know, that's what keeps me in this great business, because it's not transactional for me. It's personal. It's special. It's like, it's this unbelievable intersection of my love for history, architecture, and for helping people get from one place to the other and become happier because of their real estate.
God, honestly, I really wish that you're just, because you do, like, nobody can see the giant smile she has on her face right now as she describes the history of New York. Like, you ooze positivity, and like, I just hope this is like contagious.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I remember honestly when like we used to go, I mean, any family holiday we've been on, or like even days out, my dad obviously is very into architecture. And so I remember there was this one particular holiday in Rome. I think I was like 14, 15 and like prime teen years where you're like trying to boycott anything and everything that your parents want you to do.
Of course.
And I just remember there is a photo of me like half asleep in a church, which this is like, Rome is like, I mean, there's a church on every street corner. It's like going to London and seeing a Pret in like every street. And yeah, we were in like, I don't know, the 80th church we had been in that day. And my dad's testing us on what type of columns those were. And I was like, oh my God, ask me again. Like, yeah. So God, it's great to see that you're just so passionate. You seem like the kind of person that would have had like a vision board. Like, did you have a particular vision of what you wanted your life to look like?
Yes, I have never physically had a vision board, but I've been doing visualizations since I was very young, for as long as I can remember. I didn't know they were I didn't know there was like a term for it, or there was that that me visualizing was an exercise that, you know, mindfulness coaches would teach, or I had no idea. It came about because I would visualize myself performing, and I can choreograph in my head. So I can basically close my eyes and see myself on a stage, or you know, on a gymnastics mat in front of judges and an audience. And like, I could see everything down to the leotard that I was wearing, the apparatus, like I can hear the music in my head. And so I would visualize either a routine that I already had and I'd practice it in my head and I'd practice over and over again, or I'd visualize, I'd choreograph in my head and visualize what I wanted to do, you know, listen to the music, choreograph while I was sitting there. And then when I started playing more sports, playing basketball, running track, I'd start visualizing, you know, myself in those arenas. But what you're really visualizing is your success, because you're looking at how can I actually practice this now so I can be my best, I can prepare for it down the line. So I've been doing that ever since I was maybe 4 or 5. I didn't know until just a couple of years ago that the practice of visualization is what many top CEOs, world leaders, you know, people who turn their lives from like rags to riches, one of the main exercises that they do. So while I've never had a vision board, I've had a vision for my life for a long time. And I think that has not only helped me ascend in my career and pick myself up at times when I just felt like it'd be impossible and I was like down, I think it really helps me uplift other people as well, because I can see more for them than they can sometimes see for themselves.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that, you told that story, because I mean, I do have a question actually, I should say before I forget it, but I just quickly want to say, to add to what you just mentioned, so I'm starting a training contract in London next August, and in the interim I've been freelance writing and I've been doing loads of ghostwriting for, you know, business leaders generally or entrepreneurs who want to grow their online or already have a big online presence and just need to someone to consistently write articles and do some research so that they're backed up. I've just written one this week about a study where they tested, it was a recent study that they've done. I want to say it was actually Harvard University. And it was on the power of visualization. They literally told athletes to, they told some of them to see themselves winning the race and some of them to see themselves losing the race, and the performance matched like what they had been told to visualize. And they did it not just with athletes but with interviewees. They put people through fake interviews and they told some of them to visualize getting the interview and some of them to visualize being told they hadn't got the interview. And it wasn't just about the fact that they got the interview or not, it was the genuine sense of competence. The reports from the people who were doing, carrying out the interviews as though they were the employers, the perception they perceived of those people were that they were less competent because they just had less confidence throughout the interview. So I definitely am beginning to, like, I need to channel it into my daily routine, because I think it is like, it's such a powerful tool.
You know, it's something that can either drive or destroy. It's so weird, but like, this is all very random, but I've been like getting into drinking like a lot of tea and not as much coffee. And I'm not even like a coffee person to begin with. Like, I don't drink a lot of it, but I don't know. Like, I just found this one tea, and I think it's by Yogi, and I just like really fell in love with it. So then I was like, oh, let me try their other like variety of different like flavors. And sorry, it's so loud here in New York City.
Don't worry. Part of the vibe. I like it.
Yeah. All of our listeners, this is what New York sounds like. So I, you know, I got this like variety, and I'm one of the people who likes to read everything on the box. And like, I'm always keeping my eyes wide open. Like, I like to just observe everything that's going on around me. So the tea actually has these little sayings like on the part that you like pick up. And so this one tea said, your mind, and I'm going to paraphrase, but it says like, your mind is an extraordinarily powerful place. You can either use it to destroy or to build. And I was like, oh shit. how do they know I've like been in this like a little bit of a, you know, teetering back and forth of like, you know, being super positive and then like having these moments of self-doubt. And the reason I'm saying this is because we actually make up 90% of like what we believe. Like, our reality and our perception of reality is all the stories that we tell ourselves. Again, unless someone is constantly texting or calling you and saying that you're not good enough, like, all of that stuff is coming from inside. And so what you can actually do through the power of visualization and through the power of like affirmations is basically retrain your brain, because nothing that you're telling yourself is actually true. Like, all of that stuff is BS. So instead of going the negative way and destroying, you actually have to start practicing on a daily basis, multiple times, like 50 different affirmations a day, to start training your brain to actually believe the other nonsense that you've been telling it. And so I started doing that like, now 4 years ago. And I, 4 years ago, I'll just share, I just felt like I had all this talent in the world, but I just felt like I kept hitting this wall and like I just couldn't break through to where I wanted to be. And then, of course, in comes the frustration. And then once you're frustrated, you're thinking, well, you know, maybe like this isn't the right path. And then that leads to self-doubt. And so really, you actually have to snap out of it entirely, because like, you've basically created this lie that you're now living in. And now you have to tell your brain the opposite if you want to be free of all of that negativity. So definitely, definitely do your visuals. And like, it may feel weird at first when you're like telling yourself that affirming all these great things that you know you're capable of doing. It may feel weird when you're, you know, visualizing what your actual dream is, but it only feels weird because you've been lying to yourself about other things this whole time. And it's like, you deserve it to break free of all of that nonsense.
Oh, this couldn't have come at a better time, honestly. That when I told you I was starting in London next August, this is in the UK, the law firms hand out training contract 2 years in advance. I've had this really weird 2 year lull. You know, I've been freelancing and doing something completely different to what I'm about to do, but it's still like, it's such a weird phase where like, you kind of, I felt just stuck, like just, you know, there are fun projects and there are new things that prop up, but you always know that there's a limit to it because I'm starting this other thing. and then I'll be starting all over again in something else. And it kind of feels really strange. And I do feel like I'm very hard on myself in general.
Yeah.
And I'm an overthinker, so it doesn't help because it just means that I'm constantly telling myself bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And eating boxes of cinnamon crackers on occasion. But no, I really need to practice the whole positive affirmation thing. And do you know, there's a quote that I saw the other day and I thought it was great. It was by Leslie Blodgett. She's like the founder of Net-a-Porter, but it was actually Sarah Blakely who posted the quote from Leslie Blodgett. And she said, if you wait for the fear to pass, the opportunity will pass too. And I loved it. It was such a, seize the day kind of quote.
Man.
Yeah.
I'm feeling revved up. I'm going to do some of my best work tonight, I think.
Do you feel like you're any closer to your goal? Like, do you feel like you're close to your vision? Or do you just keep moving the bar as soon as you get there?
I always take time to acknowledge what I've achieved. You know, sometimes I write every single day, and sometimes I'll just, go off and write about what I want in life. And then as I'm writing it, when I'm done writing it, I'll look at that list and say, okay, well, I've done that and I've done that and I've made it here. Do I feel like no, I haven't. I haven't.
Okay.
But I've also, just candidly and, hopefully this resonates with other people and so they don't feel like alone. Everyone goes through very stressful periods where your brain just like feels so overworked that it's hard to get clarity. It's hard to see. It's hard to visualize. It's hard to feel like you even have enough space to make like simple decisions. And so while we're on this podcast talking about, drive and ambition and positivity, I just want everyone to know that like there is also the other side where you do have to be okay just sometimes being in the dark and feeling that like, when your TV mm-hmm. screen goes blank and it's just like the static and you're like, I just want to try to break through it. Everyone goes through that, and it's your willingness and your want to actually be there for a little bit, but of course break through it. And in those times, I feel like you probably will have your best mental breakthroughs and have your best visions. So I'm coming out of a phase where like I haven't had that strong of a vision for a while. The pandemic has been like really, I think, a massive challenge mentally. And I for millions of people, I don't think we fully acknowledge the full impact that it's had on us mentally. And, there are just sometimes, even today when I was talking to my sister and she was like, it's okay. Like a lot of people are feeling this level of just like fuzziness in their brains where you're feeling confused. You're like, do I feel this way? Do I feel this way? Like, I don't really know how I feel. But I know how I want to feel and I know what I'm capable of. And I know that I believe in myself. And so for the time being, I don't have the strongest vision for what I want things to look like, because I think I've just gone through a couple massive transitions in the last few months. And I'm looking forward to, though, finding that vision, like finding that voice and like finding that clarity again, because like that's when we all feel the most free. And that's when we're able to actually like pursue our dreams, like with the most passion and like open heartedness as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep telling myself I need to end this, but I honestly just one more question because I'm really interested in this. You mentioned, and I read this somewhere, I think, that you write every day, that you write 2 letters a day, right?
Yeah.
When did you start that practice and why?
I also started that in 2018 with my life overhaul, I guess. I started that practice because I took a course. It's a real estate course. It's called Ninja Selling. Mm-hmm. And the course is all about really actually finding ways to believe in yourself and like not in like the height, like, hoity-toity, like I'm the best, like I can do anything, but like really those times when you're like in the dumps and you're like, how am I going to get up for work the next day? Like that level of belief. And so the three kind of exercises that I learned were writing your gratitudes, writing your affirmations, visualizing, and then writing two letters a day of just like kindness, just like a letter of like, I was thinking of you and I just, you know, wanted to send a note and share like how much you've meant to me throughout my life. Or, you know, I met a really great restaurant manager who was so kind and I had this great experience there, and, you know, just sharing that they had an impact on your life in some way. Or you can write, you know, that you're grateful for that person's, you know, contribution. You can write anything.
Wow. So these letters are to a person. I thought they were like letters to yourself kind of thing.
No, they're to a person. Good old stamps.
Oh my God. You are the sweetest person in the world. That's such a nice thing to do.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, you know, you can either look at it as a chore or you can look at it as an opportunity to share something special with someone. And like, I don't ever anticipate, you know, letters back in the mail, although I do get them and it's really nice. But I do it because I think people are really special and I don't think people get enough like love and care in their life. And my goal always is to love people and make them feel good and to add happiness in any way that I can. If it's a smile, or, you know, I say hello to random people on the street all the time. Like, I think that to me, just sharing, if you have a big heart, you should share it. And if your heart, you know, you feel like you're not that outgoing of a person, like, your heart's a muscle. So you can exercise it, you can keep growing it. Like, there's so many different ways that we can improve humanity through just tiny, tiny, tiny things. Like acknowledging other human beings, I think, is a really great start. So that's kind of where my letter writing comes from. And it's something that I hopefully will want to do the rest of my life.
Honestly, I'm so glad I asked that question. That is my favorite thing I've heard in a very long time. Oh, I think it's the nicest thing you can. Oh, it's just so cute. I'm gonna start doing it. I really am. As you were saying it, I was trying to figure out how am I gonna ask for people's addresses without sounding like a bit of a creep, because I feel like no one asks each other for their addresses anymore. I'm just gonna pretend I'm gonna.
Yeah. Know. Well, there are a couple ways to do it so that you don't feel creepy. You can just kind of like introduce the idea to your friends or family and say like, mm-hmm. Hey, like I'm really getting into, you know, writing. I'd love to, you know, become a pen pal, send you a letter. Sometimes I'll just post me writing a letter on my Instagram and say like, you know, if you're interested in, you know, getting a letter, like I'm happy to send you something in the mail. And like people will add, it's so crazy to know how many people want to be like deeply interacted with and not just like BS interaction, like sending a heart or something. Like there is such a longing in our society to like be heard and listened to, and for people who actually do want to engage. So introducing that opportunity to people will not come off as creepy. I think in fact, you're going to realize how many people actually really do want to talk and, you know, and write back as well.
Wow. Well, I'm genuinely going to adopt it. Like I'm doing this. Yeah. Before the end of this year, I'm going to send out my first letter for sure.
Yeah. I think that's.
In fact, I'm going to buy an address book. That's what I'll do. I'll write all my addresses in it.
That's the best way to do it, because it gets so lost. It gets so lost on the phone, and then you open your phone and you do something else. Like I just write everything out. I have like. I literally have notebooks like all over my house, like everywhere. I'll show you. I literally have notebooks like everywhere.
Oh my God.
I have like three sitting by the couch. and honestly, where I actually, if I really think about this, where did I find this book? When I was 16, I think it was my neighbor who gave this to me. My neighbor gave me this book, and I'm forgetting the name of it, but I have it in my house. And it was about this woman who also, this is a true story, lived in New York City, lived on Riverside Drive, which is where we lived at the time. And a lot of times in New York, people will just throw out their furniture on the street. And especially in like old buildings, like if sometimes they're renovating one of the like common spaces, you know, they'll find these old relics from like decades ago and they'll just like throw it out onto the street. And so this, in the book, this woman was walking down Riverside Drive and found a stack like 5 feet high of old trunks, you know, the big old like black trunks that you see in like old movies. Found like all these like trunk cases that had people's like initials engraved in them, like just really, really beautiful like relics from like the 40s. And she stopped and she opened one of them and found this diary. And this diary was from this woman who used to live in the building. And she wrote about her life every single day from the time that she was like 10 until she was like 17 or 18, which are such formative years and like so special. And so fast forward in the book, the woman contacts the lady whose diary it is and brings it all the way down to her. She's now in her like 80s. And what's so fascinating, that's like always stuck with me, and I don't want to get emotional, but reading, she said while she was reading her diary at like 80 years old, and she's reading herself writing at 12 years old, 14, 16, she said, "I forgot who I was when I was that age." And she said, just having that reminder of who you were at all these different stages was the most special thing that she'd ever experienced in her life. Beyond getting married, beyond having kids, beyond like the kids' graduation, she said, getting to remember who I was and hearing myself at 15 was the most special thing she ever felt. And so from that time, I've just always tried to write and have like, you know, again, like I'm so old and cheesy, but I have like Polaroid cameras in my house. Like I have disposable cameras. So just holding on and trying to remember like who we are at all these different times, and like not just trusting our phones that we lose and break and have 30,000 photos on them, but just having a couple small pieces that like you'll never lose, hopefully not lose, I think to me is kind of part of where the letter writing started, where like my writing every day has grown to. And that to me is the most special thing you can have, is yourself, your memory of you, and your visuals of your future.
That is, honestly, it gave me chills. Like I really want to start doing this. And I go through phases of going in and out of journaling. And I really want to be consistent with it, because I think it's going to be such a like powerful thing to look back at and, you know, read over. In fact, after this, send me your address. I'm going to send you a book. There's a book that I know that you will love. I'll send it to you.
Thank you so much. Well, we will become pen pals, and I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope that everyone listening will take some time to reflect on themselves and write a couple things down, and to never forget your dreams and never forget your vision for what you want your life to look like. And if you can't see it at this very second, just keep telling yourself that it will come, and love yourself as much as possible.
That's such a nice message to end on. Honestly, Mackenzie, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a very busy schedule, so this is such a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to writing some letters back and forth between New York and the UK.
Yay.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We really hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We love hearing from you. Bye.